know I wanna be
free. Wanna be free.
I wanna be
free. Wanna be free.
Welcome to Liberty Chats, produced by members of the Steamboat Institute's Emerging Leaders Council. Thank you for joining us. We talk to a variety of experts, leaders, journalists, and policymakers about our nation's founding principles, why they are still so relevant and essential to preserving freedom for everyone, what specific challenges and threats they face today, and how those founding principles best safeguard and empower everyone's ability, young and old, to attain prosperity and personal happiness.
Welcome to another episode of Liberty Chats. I'm Carl Honegger with the Steamboat Institute's Emerging Leaders Council Alumni Board. I'm here today with Jimmy Morrison. Jimmy, I know that you helped work on the documentary that just came out for online viewing called Grid Down, Power Up. It's narrated by Dennis Quaid, and it was written by and directed by David Tice. What was your role in this documentary?
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. I'd been hearing about it for a while because David Tice was the producer of my documentary on the housing bubble and the sequel to The Bigger Bubble that we've been working on. And he this was just his passion project. Like he'd produced films in the past. His background was more in the markets. He's known for predicting the dot-com crash. He had a symposium in New York City with Jim Grant at the peak of the dot-com bubble. And so he's more of known in those circles as being a big bear. This is something that he was really passionate about, and he decided to take it on, and he wrote and directed the project. Based on our work together on the housing bubble, he asked me to take a look at it and just give him some notes. And one thing led to another, and I ended up being a pretty big script consultant on the project and was, you know, really glad to be able to come in, because for him, you know, he's not necessarily, this is his first film where he's writing and directing. So it was beneficial for him to have a set of eyes that had kind of been through this before and knew what to look for. And it was also beneficial for me because it allowed me to step away from the bubble movies for a little bit and just get a fresh look at a project and then be able to come back. I think it really helped me a lot. So I started out as a script consultant, and one thing led to another, and I ended up doing all the motion graphics with Jake Dilley, who is normally a sound guy. He does the music and the sound editing for my documentaries, but he's been branching into graphics, and you know, it's kind of an industry where you got to know how to do everything. You got to be a jack of all trades a lot of times, although us Austrians prefer to just specialize in things. He had me do the graphics, and I was really involved in the script, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. And then the other thing that I added to the project, I guess, is the website you mentioned is griddownpowerup.com, but yeah. they also have an app that I helped develop with a programmer. So you can go watch the movie for free on this app. And then if you want, you can pay it forward. And for example, like let's say you watch the film, at the end, it's going to pop up and say that, you know, Jeff F. from Philadelphia paid for you to be able to watch this film. And not only can you pay money to help other people see the film, but you can also send a note to the guy that actually paid for you to watch it so that he can, have feedback on it, which is kind of a cool like community that they're developing over there. And so we developed the app for Grid Down. And then we also have an app coming out for my production company, Let Us Disagree Productions, so that we can get the housing bubble and the bigger bubble out in more mediums.
That's awesome. That is like a really great way to take something that, you know, it's not going to be discussed in the mainstream media, even on, I would say, like Fox News. The thing about this documentary that I'm discovering is this is like one way to spend an hour focused on this topic. Instead of like you hear once in a while, every so many years, there is a problem with the grid. But it's kind of like, oh, maybe this person's like overreacting or a kook or something like that. But once you really get to understand how it impacts people's lives, this is a documentary because it's talking about what's happened in the past, but very much wants to address and prevent stuff in the future. I know that Steamboat Institute last year actually had Robert Bryce speak at an event we had, and he very much talked about how living in Texas, it's a reality, the impact that the grid going down impacts people's lives, people die. This is something that is very important. And so I think that everybody should, like you're saying, not just watch documentary, but pass it forward to the next person. And so I think that's a great way to kind of guerrilla marketing, almost like, hey, you know, a couple people who trust you and might be interested, or maybe some family members. And if you just keep that going, like eventually the message will spread that securing our grid is important. And it's not just some political thing. It's
right,
completely nonpartisan. It's just human reality. And so I look forward to watching the whole documentary. I watched, they have an 8-minute basic introduction if you want to kind of get the highlights before you sit down and watch it with some friends or family members. But it's great that it's free, stream online, but go ahead and download the app if you're listening to this. And Jimmy, I know you mentioned you've actually got Let Us Disagree is your website, and that's your, did you call it your production company?
Yeah, that's right. My production company is Let Us Disagree Productions, and the website's just letusdisagree.com.
Okay, that's awesome. I've actually got your DVD right here of the housing bubble, and you have a follow-up movie called The Bigger Bubble, right? And that's available for, it's not available for streaming right now, right? It's
right. Yeah. The Bigger Bubble viewing. Yeah. The Bigger Bubble. We did a test screening at Oklahoma State so far. But we haven't, it's not out to the public yet. The housing bubble, is available digitally on Vimeo. If you just go to my website, it's there. Or you can go to thebubblefilms.com or thebiggerbubble.com. You can get it on DVD and Blu-ray, as you mentioned as well. And it's just $10 because we want to, you know, even though $10 isn't worth as much as it used to be when we started making the project, we want to get this out to as many people as we can. And, you know, as we expand the project with the second film, I'm really excited to start rolling out, scenes and more clips to promote it and stuff like that. So we can get the ideas out there where people can watch it for free. And like I mentioned, we're going to do the app idea as well in the future.
Awesome. I know that from what I understand about these bubble films is you originally started and you had almost close to finished a product, a movie you could watch, but then you actually wanted to go back and make it easier for people to view. Can you describe like what your decision was in that and what's so nice about these films?
Yeah, absolutely. So the premise of them is the idea that, you know, there are people out there that predicted the housing crash. And so we should ask them why it happened and what's next. Because all the responses, they didn't bother asking any of these people, you know, why it happened. So the responses weren't based on the actual problems. They were based on just, you know, patching things over and trying to just kick the can down the road. And so we shot these interviews way back from 2011 to 2013 with like Ron Paul, Jim Rogers, Mark Faber, Doug Casey, Peter Schiff. These are a lot of big investors that had predicted it. We have Jim Grant from Grant's Interest Rate Observer, who's mentioned in the Big Short film. And then we also have some great economists like Robert Murphy and Mark Thornton, Roger Garrison, David Stockman is in the film. So we have this loaded cast, and we had all this great content where in these interviews, we looked back at the housing bubble and looked back over the last century, really, of how we got to the point where they could have even created the housing bubble. By going back and looking at all that stuff, but then also having all this content where we're looking forward and seeing how they responded and, you know, the results of that, I just realized that you know, everybody doesn't want all the history, you know, most people are just interested in, what affects them now. And so we split it into two films, with the first film going up to 2008. And then the second film starts with the bailouts in 2008 and brings it right up to the beginning of 2020. It's kind of funny because it's like Lord of the Rings in a sense, because, I kind of had this vision at the beginning of making four episodes, like an extended four part version of it. But then condensing it down into one movie. And so I did all the work of, you know, making these four episodes, or at least writing them and getting them as far along as I could. But what I decided to do is take the first two episodes and make those a movie, and then the last two episodes are the next movie. So it's kind of confusing, because there's, you know, there's the feature versions, there's different episodes or whatever. But what's going to be cool about the app is, you can watch the four episodes, right? So the first episode is the causes of the housing bubble, the lead up to the housing bubble. And then the second episode looks back at the last 100 years in the past and says, okay, if that's what we're saying caused it, does that hold true for other crashes in the past, you know, like the stagflation of the 70s, the Great Depression, stuff like that? And what can we learn from the causes of those? And what can we learn to the different ways that they responded to those crashes over the years? Because what a lot of people don't realize is in 1920, there was a depression as well, but they did the exact opposite of what they did during the Great Depression. And it was over within a year and a half. They actually cut the federal budget in half. Like federal spending, not the increase in federal spending, the actual federal budget was cut in half, which makes sense, because if you have a recession or a depression, you're getting less tax revenue coming in because there's less economic activity going on. So it would make sense that you'd have to cut to reflect that. But during the Great Depression, they did the opposite. They, you know, spent all this money, they propped up prices and wages, and that's what extended it and made it so bad. So I think there are a lot of great lessons to learn from the past. But it's just like a book, you know, like some people are just going to read that last chapter or flip to the end, and they don't want to learn on that, and that's fine. And so the second film, I think the first film, I think is really good at reaching people on the right, because it kind of, approaches it from a free market way. Whereas the second film, since it's starting with 2008, the whole, you know, first 40 minutes of the movie is, getting into like the bailouts and all that. And so people on the left, their anti-Wall Street sentiment, they can kind of like warm up to us a little bit. And then we can, you know, bring in, all the market stuff about why you shouldn't have the government setting interest rates and creating a lot of money and stuff like that. And then the first movie, like I said, you know, the people on the right, they may agree with us in the beginning because we're talking about what I just said. And then later on, when we talk about World War One and World War Two, they may be a little more open to, you know, reflecting on their positions on war. And for example, you know, they say that, it wasn't the New Deal, all the government spending in the 30s that ended the Great Depression. But a lot of people claim that World War II ended the Great Depression, because then the government had to spend all this money and, you know, everything was focused on the war effort. And what we show in the film is that's not actually the case. And the Depression didn't actually end until the war was over. And, you know, that's when things really took off and people actually had their standard of living coming back. Because it's really
the free market is basically restored at that point in time.
I don't want to pretend we have a completely free market, but it you know, when they stop having the government decide, you know, if you can charge more for products, if you can raise wages. I mean, they were very involved in the economy during World War II, where, like, you know, they froze wages. They did all sorts of things. When that stuff was freed up and you got all those people coming back, like it was a great thing for the private economy, and we boomed.
Yeah. I really like that the first movie, The Housing Bubble, points out that it's not corporate greed that caused the housing bubble. And I think what I was alluding to earlier was, in terms of, you talk about documentary and history, and a lot of our listeners are really interested in history and they love history, but just the average person who history is not their thing, you can watch this movie and be entertained by it. It's very entertaining. That's kind of what you did
Yeah.
After you first like had the idea and thought about, okay, well, maybe episodes, and we put them into movies, you really made sure that, hey, this is entertaining. You're going to be engaged and not fall asleep learning about history. You're going to be engaged as to why the free market matters. And then in your second movie, you know, why the free market matters to really, I guess, everybody, right?
Right.
We see exact same arguments right now. I think it was Robert Reich was saying, in terms of like, you know, egg prices. He asked the question, why? Corporate greed, right, is the two-word answer. And so really,
right,
in these movies, and what you've been focused on is with Let Us Disagree Productions, I think, advocating for the fact that free markets are better for everyone, that the big mistakes that we've made in the past has not been corporate greed, but really the mistake has been allowing government control over our money, over our financial system, over our lives. And so I guess I'd like to wrap this up by asking you, really, like, how did you get into this? What would you say for other young people who are exploring the idea of advocating for liberty using art, whether it's, you know, a mobile app that connects you to a film or short films like that? How did you get into this, and why would young people who are interested in art want to advocate for liberty, want to follow your footsteps?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I guess I'll go way back then. So in 2006, I was studying economics at the University of Iowa, and I had written a script, a feature-length script for a movie, and I kind of had the realization that if I finished my economics degree, you know, I would have a job offer in theory, and, yeah, you know, then I would just never make this movie, and I would never take that risk of going out to pursue film. And so I dropped out of college, and all the money that my parents had made me save through high school, I spent on a camera and started filming bands. Jake Dilley, who I mentioned before, I toured all over the country filming his band. We were at South by Southwest from like 2009 to 2013. He played on the same stage as Adele, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. So awesome. I had all these great experiences where I got to learn firsthand of, you know, being on the road. And, you know, it's something where like, you got to learn how to make yourself useful. You can't just be like, oh, well, I'm filming the band, so that's going to be enough. Like, you know, I'd be the, when they'd get paid, when the bar closed, like I'd be the one that drove the RV to the next city to make sure we got there on time. When the vehicles broke down, I was the one figuring out how to fix them, that sort of thing. So that was a great learning experience for me. When I dropped out of school, the way I decided I would fund this lifestyle and these film projects was by painting houses. I'd been painting houses, and so I started my own house painting business, and I actually started it the month that house prices peaked. So my timing was awful. And as I watched the housing crash unfold, you know, I certainly didn't predict it, obviously. It made me want to get back into economics as I saw, you know, how far from a free market we really were in 2008 and 2009 when they're bailing out all these banks and doing all these stimulus bills and stuff. And so I decided to get back into economics, not as a career, but just I was curious. And so I did a torrent search for economics, and the Mises Institute had put Henry Hazlitt's book, Economics in One Lesson, out as an audiobook for free, and they had uploaded a torrent of it. So that just happened to be what came up. And so I didn't know anything about Austrian economics. I didn't know about the Mises Institute. You know, I was very familiar with like Milton Friedman, and I'd read Free to Choose. And he had a documentary based on his book, Free to Choose, that came out in 1980. And the BBC had blamed all the problems in the 70s on deregulation and greed. And so he made this documentary in 1980 to kind of combat that. And so I saw like, okay, we have Inside Job as the best documentary that I had seen on the housing bubble. We needed a free market look at it. And so I set out to make an economics film. I didn't want to make a political film. You know, I don't want to get into like the intentions behind these policies. I want to get into like what are the causes and effects, and like, you know, take a you know, a somewhat neutral look at it. And so I figured that if Henry Hazlitt could write an Economics in One Lesson and basically describe how our housing crash happened way back in 1946, there had to be other people out there who had. And so I wanted to make sure I didn't get caught up in the next bubble. So that's where I got the idea. Okay, I'm going to track down these people and go interview them and make this documentary. And around, I guess I started the project in like the beginning of 2011, end of 2010. And at the time, I was also working for Gary Johnson on his, he was a Republican at the time, on his presidential campaign. And honestly, he was the one who encouraged me to be like, hey, you should quit your job and focus on this and actually do this. Like, he was the one that encouraged me to go out and do it. He and I snuck into the Chicago Federal Reserve Building and filmed a little promo video. so I got to give him a little props. But yeah, so from 2011 to 2013, I filmed these interviews and I realized that like nobody wants to look at a bunch of charts. Nobody wants to talk about economics for an hour and a half. And so what I found was that the way to get people to keep their attention was humor and pop culture, things that they already had connection to. And so what people will find, you can watch the trailer even and be able to pick up on this. But what you find in the film is it's full of like, not just like Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, but it's also full of like cartoons like Animaniacs and South Park and all sorts of stuff that's gonna bring people in and make it easier to understand. And it was something where I could have just rushed it out and, you know, made the economics film and gotten those core things in there. But by spending those extra years on the project, I really, you know, every word matters. And each scene builds on the others. Like, I actually just had to go back and fix some closed captioning stuff because we're actually expanding the first film. It's going to come out on Google, the Apple Store, and on Vudu on those apps as well. And so I had to fix some closed captioning issues. And so I'm still working on that first film. I mean, I'm not trying to sound like full of myself, but like I mean, I wouldn't change the movie. Like I feel like every word counts. It's something where I think if you're gonna be passionate about these things and want to get those ideas out there, like I made the movie that I wanted to see in 2008. Like I really, instead of making it for everybody else, I kind of made it for myself because it didn't exist. But at the same time, you got to figure out what's going to resonate with other people and what's going to connect with them. Around 2015, I realized like, okay, I just spent the last 4 years. I've listened to nothing but economics podcasts and lectures. It was my life, 100 hours a week, was everything. And I realized like, okay, I didn't get into this to be a day trader or, you know, like know every little thing about the markets. I got into this to tell stories. And so I started listening to a lot more fiction and getting back into the filmmaking side of things. So I think it's important to kind of answer your question. I think it's really important to not just have one thing. And, you know, like, if you're only obsessing over economics, like, yes, you know, work your ass off on it, but find other things, find hobbies, you know, hang out with friends. Don't think you have to sacrifice your entire life just to be able to be a good advocate for these ideas. Something I found is that when you branch out to other issues or other ideas, like, for example, my next film, I'm going to be doing a basketball documentary. It's kind of a father-son story about Luka Garza, who was the first Sporting News National Player of the Year 2 times in a row since Michael Jordan. And he has this amazing story of his family, like coming here from Bosnia and stuff. But what I found is when you branch out to other things and study other things and allow yourself to step away, it makes the product better. And it's, you know, I think that like, yes, economics is important. But without that pop culture stuff and without, other things to bring people in, it's not enough. It's not enough to just know libertarian theory, you know, like you got to be like Eric July, where you're going out and making comic books. And, you know, yeah, there's all these people in the movement that are doing these great, interesting things. But it's really a culture that's going to drive things, I think. And so, so economics films, even though I'm here plugging an economics film, like,
yeah.
it's great. But we want to tell stories too, because stories are what connect and resonate with people. And I think that's something we were able to do with the housing bubble and with the bigger bubble, is we found a way to make it about more than economics. It's about, you know, the real story behind how all this happened. And, you know, I'm not trying to manipulate audiences where it's just like a bunch of emotional stuff about, oh, this guy jumped off a building after the crash or anything like that.
Yeah.
But
it's real life. Yeah.
It's stuff
we heard about, you know, back then, or
right.
People aren't old enough to remember. Like, they need to remember that this is what happened during that time period. That's how intense it was. And so this is really just like a warning of, hey, like, this could happen again. I mean, obviously right now we are in a bubble, but
right.
We don't know exactly what's going to pop it. But yeah, I really appreciate you helping our listeners understand really what got you into this, what people need to do if they're interested in film or creative arts and still want to advance and advocate for liberty. So thanks so much, Jimmy. And I look forward to what you're doing with the app that you're making. And thank you so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate you having me on. And if people want an easy way to find all that stuff, just go to letusdisagree.com.
Wanna be free,
I wanna be free,
wanna be free, yeah.